You're listening to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. Now here are Mike Ciano and Corey Schwartz.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the MLB.com Fantasy 411 Podcast Showgram Extravaganza. Mike Ciano along with Cowboy Corey Stat Schwartz.
Now I was getting it fired up in
here.
Yeah,
you're getting it fired up. You were waving your lasso around. And the great crew on the other side of the glass. Good morning to everyone, except for those of you who will be listening to this in the afternoon and evening at some point.
Those of our friends on the other side of the pond, it's already the afternoon.
Ah, yes, yes. And those of our friends down under, it's, I have no idea.
Yeah, I think it's tomorrow. How was Thursday?
Happy Friday.
Australia. I hope Thursday was awesome.
Lots to go over for news and notes.
This
and then,
podcast
of course,
is a time machine, Mike.
Of course, your tweets. Yes, it is. That's true. But first, a little housekeeping. Fantasy411.mlblogs.com is the place to get your two-star pitchers, your pitcher ditch, your wise sage advice from the goose. And you can follow the goose at ZachMLB. You can follow the great Fred Zinke. I hope everybody's been reading his columns at Fred Zinke MLB. Corey's at Schwartstops. I'm at the Cap23, but I don't do anything. And, of course, the general account at Fantasy411. How are you today, sir?
I'm great.
Yeah?
I'm great. Look, we got some day games. Everything's good.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't include...
Or some morning games, as they call them in London.
That's right. some matches. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the StatCast podcast with Mike Petriello, who you could have seen on MLB Now yesterday. He did a great job. You know, one-upped Corey. Corey was on a couple weeks ago. They felt they needed to really raise their game and do a little bit better next time. And they did. They went out and they found somebody better than Corey from in the house.
So. I put the toe in the water and Mike dove in.
And Mike punched you in the face and you fell in.
Something like that. Not where I was going with that, but yeah, by all means.
Anyway, so check out Mike Petriello's work on the site as well for StatCast. Very interesting stuff. And like I said, we have the StatCast podcast as well that you can subscribe to now.
Yep. That's a good one. I mean, you know, already, again, not to go off on a tangent or whatever.
That's
but
what we do here.
The StatCast data is about understanding player skills. Mm-hmm. And as a fantasy baseball owner, the outcomes matter, but it's the skills that get you there. Mm-hmm. Ron Chandler 30 years ago said roster skills, not stats. And we really are getting deeper and deeper now, you know, into what makes players go and what makes them good. And it's really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, it is good stuff. And it's only going to get better.
We're just scratching the surface.
We're just scratching the proverbial surface.
We're working on a couple of new metrics. Everything up until now is basically observed measurements, how hard, how fast, how many. We're starting to work on some second order stuff that I think is going to be really, really cool and really helpful in fantasy, by the way. There's just a tease for you.
All right, there you go. You did a great job with this show sheet, by the way.
Glad
you really did. He bolded the words and then underlined them.
Yeah. I always do bolding and underlining.
You always do bold. I haven't seen a show sheet this good in quite a bit.
Well, usually I email it, and you can't get the same amount of formatting in the email. And this is super exciting stuff for our listeners.
Did you do this on the phone?
No, I did it on a computer, a desktop computer.
The phone has a computer in it, by the way. I don't know if you've heard.
I was specifying between a mobile device and desktop computer.
Okay.
Actually, it was a mobile device. It was a laptop.
Not as mobile as other mobile devices, but mobile nonetheless.
Semi-mobile.
All right. Comings and goings, according to Corey Schwartz. Big return yesterday in our nation's capital. Was that a home game? Yeah, it was, because they walked off. Steven Strasburg returns from his DL stint. 5 shutout innings. 6 strikeouts, 1 walk. Hit 97. To me, that's the most important number.
Oh,
97.
Yeah. The most important thing to me is that, you know, look, he threw 94 pitches in 5 innings, not the model of efficiency, but he was able to throw 94 pitches. You know, we talked about Strasburg in the past on the show. You know, Jim was here. When you look at it statistically, there were a lot of signs that things were going to look up. You know, very, very unlucky batting average on balls in play, very, very unlucky left on base rate. You know, the strikeouts were down and the walks were up, but nothing drastic. The real issue is that I really think this boils down to the injury. You know, that strained muscle in his shoulder or in the back of his neck, let's call it, just so people don't start freaking out. I'm not a doctor. I think that was screwing up his mechanics. We talked about that at length, and that will really hurt you with runners on base. That's what points to a very low strand rate. He's still got the stuff to strike people out. It's still good enough. He's still got good enough command. He's not walking people. But with runners on base, he can't execute the pitches the way he normally would, and that was leading to a lot of big innings. Yesterday, 6 strikeouts, 1 walk, obviously 5 shutout innings, did all those things you want to see. I haven't read anything about how he looked mechanically. Bottom line, I think this is a huge buy low right now. I'm not the type to acquire starting pitching. I'm always trading it away.
Yep.
But I'm the exception. If you're the type to trade four starters, I'm kicking the tires on Strasburg right now.
All right, good stuff. Freddie Freeman to the DL, so he's a going.
Yeah.
Was having a nice little season there, batting 300, about a dozen homers, closing in on 50 RBIs. Are we concerned here?
Well, I'm not terribly concerned about Freeman. It's just a contusion. They think he'll be back in the minimum amount of time. The reason I brought this up is that he leads the Braves in everything but hits and stolen bases.
He's Tony Campbell.
Yeah, he's the guy. But, you know, so they're going to replace him with a platoon of, you know, Chris Johnson and Joey Tertislavich or whatever. Point is, when you see the Braves come up on the schedule on the pitcher ditch list,
Pitch.
They were a shaky offensive team to begin with. Nick Markakis has zero home runs. He's, like, batting third most of the time. Pierzynski, who has, like, a 300 on-base percentage, is hitting cleanup. I mean, this is not a strong offense. You need to pick on this offense as long as Freeman is out because, I mean, they have very, very few even replacement-level players in that lineup right now.
Crazy.
It's just a fact.
It is a fact. It's a fact, Jack. Red Sox, the Rusney Castillo experiment is over for now as he gets shipped down the AAA. Victorino is in a minor league rehab assignment at Pawtucket. So it didn't go necessarily as planned.
No, I mean, you know, Castillo hasn't shown it yet. 544 OPS and 74 at-bats. You could give him a little bit of a pass because of the injuries he's had. But let's not forget, he's 27 years old. This isn't some young prospect they're going to see what they got. Right, they need him to start producing. He'll go back down. Jackie Bradley Jr. got called up. He'll presumably fill in while Victorino's out.
He was killing it in the minors, wasn't he?
Right, but he hasn't shown anything at the major league level, so he's probably got a very small window again.
Offensively,
right.
Yeah, nice little play, defensively.
You know, it's still, right now, Victorino's got the chance to come back next week and be a semi-regular player again.
And get himself traded.
And he was starting to hit before he got hurt last time, so there is some short-term value opportunity here with Shane Victorino when he comes back next week. I think deeper leagues and AL-only leagues need to get him back on the radar.
Ivan Nova, Supernova returns. Very exciting for Yankee fans yesterday. He looked fantastic. You know, was pitching the contact there, but he got a couple strikeouts. And, you know, listen, I know the Phillies went nuts, and we'll get to one of the main reasons why the previous two games, but it's still the Phillies.
I mean,
let's not go crazy and think we're going to have a rematch of the 09 World Series here.
No.
So, Yankees, the fantasy impact is the Yankees will go to six-man rotation for a while. But this is nothing like, coincidentally, what the six-man rotation nonsense was on the other side of the bridge, on the other side of the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge.
Yep.
By the way.
Yep. Or nope, depending on how you look at it. You know, quick note on the Phillies. Chase Utley went on the DL. He's probably not on any rosters at this point, but looking like a sad fade to his career. The interesting thing to me here is, look, Nova we know is like a mid end of rotation starter, pitcher ditch guy, depending on the format. Not a lot to say there. But the Yankees are going to go to a six-man rotation, and they're kicking the can down the road, kind of like the Mets did, because the guy they want to be one of their anchors, Nate Eovaldi, has been terrible. He hasn't been any better than he was. 4.95 ERA, 100 hits allowed, and 76 in the third innings.
He's always given up hits.
I don't think I'm cruel.
Now, hold on.
Mike.
He's always given up hits. Didn't he lead the league in hits given up in the NL? So he knew he was going to give up hits.
Yeah, he's only in the top five now.
Now, the ERA is a little tricky.
4.95
But
ERA.
He got murdered in an inning two or three starts ago and did bounce back against the Tigers.
Okay, but that's my point.
I'm a Nate apologist. I apologize for being a Nate apologist.
And you're going exactly where I wanted to go with this. So thank you for playing into my trap. You've got a guy who hasn't been good, and you can apologize for him all you want. There's a guy who's been far superior.
Adam Warren.
Adam Warren, who's got a 3.62 ERA, almost a run and a half lower than the
Eovaldi. What's his career high innings pitched?
Last year, what did he throw, 100 innings? But he was a starter all throughout the minors.
He's never thrown more than 78 innings in a season.
In the majors. But he was a starter all throughout the minors. He's got six quality starts out of his last seven.
No, he's good.
This is right now the better pitcher.
Now listen.
I can't hear you. The Yankees are kicking the can down the road because the guy they want to be in the rotation has been the lesser pitcher on merit.
Oh, CeCe Sabathia?
Well, look, Sabathia, Tanaka, Pineda, you know those guys.
My comment when this came out was, oh, good. Now CeCe Sabathia is perfectly fit in as a sixth starter because that's what he is. He's like a sixth starter.
Outside of Tanaka, you know, Pineda's been very, very erratic. He's had some great outings, but he's had some brutal outings. He got destroyed by the Phillies.
Yep.
You can make an argument that Adam Warren has been their second best starter.
No, no.
Particularly over the last 6 weeks. And that's the guy who's most likely to go to the bullpen. So what they've done, as we talked about with the Mets, as you brought up, they're kicking the can down the road. They're hoping the problem will solve itself.
But this is different because the Mets did not have somebody literally coming off the DL from Tommy John surgery. They had Matt Harvey coming back from TJ, but, you know, he was ready for the season or whatever. And you have DeGrom and DeGrom and Syndergaard, guys that you know you have to control their innings for. You know, obviously Bartolo gets thrown out. And then they had the problem with two veterans in G and Nice. So, yes, they were kicking the can, but the way they did it, I think, lent itself to criticism. I don't think there's true criticism here because of the Nova situation and Tanaka.
Yeah.
You know? I think that just kind of saves you a little bit of time. And if they go, the only thing I hate about the six-man rotation is now you can't get two-star pitchers.
Unless you have a guy on Monday and no days off. But here's the funny thing. I've had Adam Warren on and off in Tout Wars. Mm-hmm. I'm still doing a sort of a modified pitcher ditch because it's a weekly league. But he was scheduled to start against the Phillies on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So I picked him back up. Nova comes back and takes that start. They push Warren back now.
Week.
And he's got Houston. Plus, he goes from a two-start week next week to a one-start week, as you said.
Right.
So, look, I think he can handle Houston. You know, I think that's the kind of offense that he can have some success against, believe it or not, even though they hit a lot of home runs. But you'd much rather face Philadelphia.
Absolutely.
Recent results notwithstanding.
Andrew Heaney, speaking of ERAs, had a 4.71 ERA in the minors, but it was PCL, right? Correct?
Yeah, Salt Lake City, one of the tougher places to pitch.
And he was striking guys out, almost a strikeout an inning pitched, but a big ERA, had a 300 average against. His numbers were not impressive in the grand scheme of things. But he gets called up to replace Jared Weaver, who went on the DL. And speaking of Houston, he gets him on a day game after a night game. Getaway day, goes out, everything lines up well, 6 innings, 1 run.
Yep.
Correa got him on a big double to tie the game, and then it went into extra innings, whatever. But I'm a Heaney guy. This is guy 2 of 3 in a row that are on my 16-team mix.
Sweet.
So I'm excited about Heaney. I'm excited about Nova. I'm extremely excited about the next guy, but let's talk about Heaney for a
minute. Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, the 4.71 ERA hides that he's actually pitched pretty well. Basically a 3-to-1 strikeout to walk rate, nearly a strikeout per inning. And don't forget, this was the guy they got for Howie Kendrick, for all intents and purposes.
Correct.
So their expectation is he's going to be part of the rotation. Now, this could go one of two ways. The Angels have 3 days off between now and the All-Star break, which is coming up a lot sooner than you think. They've got an opportunity to mix and match and skip a little bit and basically get away without a fifth starter for a little while, except for a couple of points. So they could say, all right, we had Heaney go in that spot yesterday. They can go to a four-man for a while if they want, or they can use this as an audition to see what they have. Because he pitched well, I think it's going to go on sort of a start-by-start basis. All right, he pitched well. Let's see what we got in another one.
Mm-hmm.
But if he comes out and starts struggling, they could go to a four-man. So there's an opportunity here for him to get a good long look with Jared Weaver out, as you said, with that hip impingement. AL-only leagues, deeper leagues, this is a guy to put on the radar.
Yep.
Throws 95, good changeup, good slider. The results haven't been there, but he's young. And, you know, I guess when you sort of look at it in context, 4.71 in Salt Lake City with those peripherals isn't terrible.
You want me to ready for me to blow your mind?
Hold on, let me get a towel. All right, go ahead.
About to blow your mind. So in the 16-team mix that I'm in, my buddy's league, which is competitive, you know, you have to pay to get in. It's been fun. I've enjoyed it. You get 2 minor slots. So think about it. You got 16-team league. You're drafting 24, 25. So it's basically a 27-round draft, give or take one or two. And I had 2 minor spots. The 2 guys I drafted for my minor spots?
Tell me.
Andrew Heaney.
Uh-huh.
And Mikhail Franco.
Wow.
And that they're next to each other on the list.
Nice segue. So have you ever been less upset about an 0-for-4 that Franco took on Wednesday after what he did? 5 RBIs in back-to-back games. Read the I can't even say these numbers.
They're
read them out
awesome.
Loud.
They're awesome. 390. His slash is 395, 441, 767. This is just June. 8 doubles, 8 homers, 21 ribbies, 16 runs. And by the way, he can pick it. He can pick it and he can sling it. He is a good player. I was just thinking about this as I realized these guys were all next to each other. Because like I said, I have Nova, Heaney, and Franco on this team. And so that's kind of weird how they're all next to each other. But to me, he was the hitting prospect to target on draft day, much like we talked about with the first baseman. Whereas in the first round, you were going to have Goldschmidt, Abreu, and Encarnacion, right? And Miggy. And then it's like, okay, do I invest in a first baseman that early? All great players, don't get me wrong.
Or do you wait on a Votto?
Or do I wait on a Votto to share whatever? To me, he was the Votto to share Prince Fielder because everybody was reaching for Correa, and it's all worked out now.
And Bryant.
And Bryant and Buxton. And it's not that I didn't like those guys. I just knew they weren't going to go early. So I just let them all go, built my team with guys I knew that were going to be on opening day rosters, mind you. And went and got myself Mikhail Franco because I think he was a forgotten prospect this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, look, there's good news and bad news here. I mean, you know, every time somebody goes off on a hot streak, the question comes up on Twitter, you know, is he for real? He's a good hitter. I mean, he's not going to hit 395, I don't think, all year. I mean, I'm probably not going out on a limb there in saying that. You know, the good news is he's now their number three hitter. That's sort of the Cadillac spot in the lineup, although sabermetric guys think he should be the number two hitter. That's okay. You know, he's off to a great start. He's actually making pretty good contact. Doesn't walk a lot, but doesn't strike out a lot. 15-4 strikeout to walk rate in June. He's not a guy who's going to draw a lot of walks, but he does make decent contact. Here's the bad news, though.
Go ahead. You know, the Phillies, kill my buzz.
The Phillies,
kill my
lineup, buzz. The Phillies lineup is scuffling.
Yep.
You know, the better Ryan Howard does, the more it becomes likely the Phillies will be able to eat his contract and trade him. Mm-hmm. There might not be a lot of lineup protection for him. And when you look at his minor league numbers, it's also a little bit of a mixed bag. 166 games at AAA between last year and the start of this year, so roughly a full season. 278, 20 homers, 106 strikeouts against 38 walks. That's okay. Mm-hmm. It's not elite prospect. But, again, good news, bad news. 45 doubles.
Yeah.
So he can drive the ball.
Yep.
And I did a lot of homework on him because I actually acquired him in a trade in Tout Wars about 2 weeks ago with Tim Heaney. Mm. The biggest thing I read over and over and over, no one was talking about his numbers. They were talking about how he made adjustments and what a smart hitter he was and how even though he was struggling at times at AAA, he was able to adjust what pitchers were doing. He was able to come out and execute a game plan. That may be subjective. That may be a soft factor like the kind of stuff that we talk about, but that was really encouraging. So it makes me think that as he, you know, look, the 395 average must come down, which means that pitchers are going to figure him out. But is he going to make the adjustments back to them? That was, I remember when Bryce Harper was a rookie. Mm-hmm. I'm not comparing Franco to Harper. Let's not go there. But remember, Harper came out really hot as a rookie and then went through a big slump over the summer.
Yep.
And then at the end of the season, picked it up again and was very effective into, I think, did they maybe make the postseason his rookie year? I don't remember. But that really got it in my mind that here's a 18-year-old kid at the time, making adjustments to major league pitchers. As they build a book on him, he's figuring them out just as fast. That's the thing that encourages me about Franco, that he's going to cool off. We know that. But I don't think he's going to collapse.
No. And he had a pretty bad May. I mean, but again, he just got called up, and he hit under 200 with only two homers and 62 at-bats. So it's just like...
He figured some things out.
Right. He figured some things out. Above and beyond.
Right.
And when he comes back, the truth will be somewhere in the middle.
Right.
So
the pitchers maybe will start to get the upper hand on him in a little while as they figure him out.
Right.
But that encourages me that he'll be able to make the corrections, make the adjustments, and stay competitive. So that's really the big takeaway for me. It's not that he's a guy who's going to put up a 1,200 OPS.
Right.
It's that this is a guy who's able to establish himself at the major league level. So when you say, quote, unquote, is this guy for real? Yeah, this is a legitimate major league offensive player right now.
And he won't turn 23 until August, late August.
Crazy, right?
All right, so young, exciting players that are up in the big leagues and never going anywhere again. It all starts now, you know, besides the veteran guys like the Harpers and the Trouts and those that ilk. But Correa is just, I mean, he's just amazing.
Since his major league debut on June 8th, he leads all major league shortstops with 6 doubles, 4 homers, 12 RBIs, and 4 steals. He's got an 886 OPS, and he's hitting 300.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the only flaw. Just so it doesn't sound like I'm an apologist or a fanboy, 17-3 strikeout to walk rate. So he's got some learning to do. But if you were drafting a shortstop-only redraft league today, would he be the number one pick? Would you take Tulo over Carlos Correa from now until the end of the season?
Knowing what I know with hindsight, I'd probably go with Correa in the upside.
Yeah, pretty crazy, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's number one pick for a reason, and, you know, he was in the right organization to be the number one pick. You knew he was going to have fast track to the major league, you know, level. I mean, it all worked out. This was the plan and kind of the player he's supposed to be. And
already at the age of what, 20, 21?
Yeah,
here's the thing.
You go back and look though. I mean, it's fun, but it's not shocking because this does happen.
No, it's not shocking, and it's not the only time it's ever happened.
Right, that's my point.
But it's exceptional. A 20-year-old isn't supposed to be dominating like this. That's the adage we've used a lot over the years.
Right.
The younger a guy makes it to the majors, mm-hmm. the more likely it is he'll become a superstar. He didn't just make the majors at the age of 20. Over the last 3 weeks, he's dominating at the
major
league
level. He's exploded onto the scene.
Good way of putting it. Now, here's the thing. Luis Valbuena, one of the strangest hitting lines around, has 19 homers, even though he's hitting under 200.
That's crazy.
19 homers.
Bob Deer?
He's going to play, right? You're not going to bench Jose Altuve.
No.
You're not going to bench Chris Carter or Evan Gattis.
No. Nope.
Where's Jed Lowry going to play? You know, Jeff Luhnow said, when Lowry comes back, he will be a big part of this team. Now, that could just be keeping the guy happy while he's off on the DL rehabbing.
Super utility is a big part of a team.
Yeah, I mean,
let's be honest. I mean, the Astros, it is a big part of the team.
The Astros offense, they strike out a lot. Okay, I get that. But they got a lot of weapons, and they're going to have another good weapon coming back. Lowry was their best hitter at the point he got hurt.
Yep. No, he didn't deserve to lose his job, but...
Well, he's not taking Correa's job.
No, he's not.
I mean, that's, you know, that was sort of like we talked about with Joey Gallo. You know, even going back to when Trout came up, you know, if you bring up that young player at the age of 20 or 21, it's kind of a no-lose situation. Because if he struggles, you say, all right, we know he's not ready. We got to look. We know what we need to work on. We send him back. If he succeeds, like Joey Gallo has been succeeding, like Correa has been succeeding, now you have that happy problem.
Well, speaking of Gallo, you see what they do. They say, kid, you want to stay up here? Get to left field.
Right, and the same thing is happening now with the Giants. They're banged up in the outfield. This is a much lesser player, obviously. Right. Brandon Belt now is moving out to the outfield.
Looking terrible, but he's out there.
Fifth game last night, he's eligible in the outfield now in some leagues, including Tout Wars. Yep. That moves Posey to first, and Andrew Susak now becomes effectively their everyday catcher.
Yep.
He's a pretty good hitter for a catcher, and it keeps Posey's bat in the lineup a little bit more. So, you know, you have to watch out for those things.
What's the, I'm trying to think, let me look at something real quick. So their outfield, obviously, is Springer. I mean...
Mariznick and Rasmus.
Yeah,
and
Tucker.
It's kind of a four-man, you know, it's kind of three guys for two spots. Springer's going to play every day.
Right, so there's two spots.
Right.
Is there room for, can Valbuena play the outfield?
I don't know if he ever has. I mean, Mariznick's on the DL for the time being, so that solves the problem for the moment.
And, they called up Domingo Santana.
Right. But you got to figure that's a four-man rotation. You know, Springer's an everyday player, three guys for two spots.
Yep.
Carter and Gattis are going to play first in DH every day. Altuve's going to play every day. You can't really bench Valbuena. Maybe you can platoon him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to bench Correa. I mean, this is going to be one of those things where he's the first guy off the bench in every single game and gets in at bat or two in every single game and starts maybe once a week somewhere.
Yeah, he's never
talking about Lowry.
He played...
Valbuena.
He's got minimal. Okay, games. Here we go. He's played.
This is real time.
No, I know. I mean, he's played maybe 15 to 20 games on the major league level in the outfield.
Yeah.
I'm just doing quick, dirty math. I see 13, a little bit in the minors when he was with Colorado. You know what? He's played about 25, 30 games in the outfield, give or take, including the minors, though.
It's going to be interesting how they fit 10 guys into 9 spots. Yeah. Well, 9 into 8, really.
Maybe they can get the extra hitter like in
You know what they should do? Here's the answer. 3 words. Evan Gattis, catcher. Dude, that would be the ultimate softball team.
What is going on with Jason Castro? Every once in a while, I'll be like watching the Astros game, and I was like, and he's on like second base, so you see him from the center field camera. Like,
they still have Jason Castro.
He's still in the majors. You never hear his name.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah, Evan Gattis, catcher. We'll see.
That would be so delicious.
Don't be surprised.
If they just basically said, you know what, defense is nice, but, like, we're here to rake. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah. And you know what? The Angels are hot on the heels. Angels are hot on those heels.
Yep.
It's a dangerous team.
Yeah,
figure it all out.
Yeah, you know, the Angels are interesting. I mean, going back to them, you know, you look at it, they basically have, like, a two-man offense.
Yeah.
You know, with Pujols and Trout.
They're pretty good, though.
Yeah. Calhoun's been a huge disappointment. Freeze has been okay. Ibar hasn't done anything.
Right.
You know, they've gotten, frankly, no production from catcher, no production from second base. Jared Weaver, who is supposed to be their ace, you know, or their number one, let's call it,
right.
Horrendous, and now on the DL. you kind of wonder how they're winning. I mean, Trout and Pujols can't bat in every single inning. They're not Bugs Bunny. Yet they just keep doing enough. I mean, it's unbelievable. But the Astros, if the Astros can find some starting pitching depth, they could do it.
And Heaney was their number one prospect. Mm-hmm. That's saying a lot. And I like Heaney. I drafted him. I mean,
deep system.
I was really surprised he was number one, according to MLB.com, which is a very reliable source.
Yeah, highly credible.
Jonathan Mayo, big, bold, and beautiful.
What, were you going to say Jonathan Mayo is wrong?
Callis, hello.
Jim Callis?
Are you kidding me? Anyway, all right.
That's crazy talk.
Staying in the AL West, Brett Lowry, ever since I've traded him, it was no big deal, but I did trade him. In fact, I think I traded Brett Lowry and Luke Gregerson for Eovaldi. Been okay. I mean, it hasn't hurt me.
Had an opportunity to get Lowry and Towers, went for Howie Kendrick instead. Yeah. Hasn't worked out. Lowry Grand Slam on Wednesday, mm-hmm. 316 in the month of June, 547 slugging, 7 doubles, 5 homers, 19 RBIs. That's actually that goes back to May 26th, not all of June. That's when he returned to the lineup after a couple days out with back stiffness, and he's been raking since then. I'm going to give you three factors that I think are contributing. Number one, I think his back is feeling better. Mm-hmm. That's a tangible reason. Mm-hmm. Number two, incredibly lucky BABIP right now, 381 BABIP in the month of June. Look, he's hitting the ball hard, but that's what you call good luck. And just a little bit improvement in his plate discipline. Strikeout to walk rate was about 10-1 in April and May, and now it's down to about 5-1 in June since he came back to the lineup. That's not a huge improvement, but that's just one more pitch per at bat, and that can make all the difference. Mm. So, you know, is he quote-unquote this good? No, I think he's a 260, 270 hitter, but it's really good to see him driving the ball. He's not running. That's, you know, the A's are not a running offense outside of Billy Burns, but it's good to see Lowry driving the ball. And the thing I like, eligible at second and third in most leagues.
Yeah. The thing about him, though, I think a lot of these stats are getting produced on the waiver wire.
Not in the 411 Listener League.
Nice. Good. Good.
Says the guy with two thumbs. That'd be me.
Who the heck is my third baseman? I had Lowry. I drafted Lowry. I drafted Semien. I drafted Belt. I had all these corner guys. Mm-hmm. Who the hell is my third baseman? I can't remember. That sucks. But I had room to trade Lowry.
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned Belt.
It's driving me nuts.
I had Belt. Belt and Lowry were in my opening day lineup in the 411 Listener League. I ended up cutting both of them because it's a 12-team mixed league. Right. You can afford to. Belt got picked up. He's put up all those big numbers for someone else, unfortunately. Oh. But I was able to get back Lowry, and I've gotten a lot of this big production. Who's the other guy?
People are listening, saying, I bet you somebody's going to be listening to the podcast, being like, hey, Siano, how much stuff did you do in college? Mikhail Franco.
Oh, right.
As I traded Lowry. Oh, same because way. I traded Lowry because I had Franco on my bench. I'm so
411, Tout
I'm
Wars.
So stupid.
I was shopping Mark Melancon to try and find a middle infield upgrade. I had an opportunity to get Lowry from either Fred Zinke. He traded him in Nando, and then Nando would have offered him to me. Mm-hmm. I was like, nah, you know, the strikeout to walk rate is horrendous. He's not driving the ball. All the indicators said stay away. I think what happened was his back was hurting him. You know, his back was a problem. It could be the strikeout to walk rate, could it be pressing after coming to a new team in that big Josh Donaldson trade, mm-hmm. trying to justify himself, the back problem, all those other things. I mean, there are things that go on that we don't know about. We're always dealing with incomplete information. I'm a stat head, right? Mm-hmm. So I looked at the numbers, and the numbers...
You got paper cuts on your nose.
The numbers said, stay away. I went for Howie Kendrick, who at the time was destroying it for the Dodgers. Mm-hmm. Kendrick's been terrible since I got him. Lowry's been out of his mind. You deal with the information you have, Mike.
Yep, you do. Jason Hayward, 3 straight games with a homer. He's having a nice little run here with a 366 average with 5 homers and 3 steals since May 27th.
Yeah, and you know, this is another one. I acquired him in Tout Wars, mm-hmm. then turned around and flipped him.
Oh!
Of course, I got Michael Franco in that deal, so
nice.
It's okay. Anyway, this is another one where the psychological aspect of it comes into play. He was dropped down in the lineup. He was hitting too many ground balls. He was being platooned a little bit. I did a lot of homework on this one, and over the last couple of days, like, now suddenly he's going berserk since I traded him. They all come down to the same thing. When he came to the Cardinals, he was pressing, trying to impress the new team, mm-hmm. the whole Oscar Tavares thing, mm-hmm. you know, kind of weighing on him a little bit. And this is actually borne out in the numbers. Even though he's not drawing a lot of walks right now, his swing rate on pitches out of the zone is way down. He's being a lot more selective. So even though he's not walking more, he's still being selective, and now he's able to drive the ball. He's up to 9 homers, 8 steals. You blink, this guy's on his way to a 2020 season. If that's your disappointing season, that's pretty good. So good for me for acquiring him. Shame on me for dumping him.
There you go. Cue up the Calypso music, please. It's time for Bullpen Follies.
Yep, good. That's terrible.
It's all in our friends to the north in Toronto. Brett Cecil back out as the Blue Jays closer. Osuna potentially the new guy now, or as I'd like to think, it's going to be Jonathan Papelbon any day now.
Yeah. Brett Cecil was the closer on opening day, lost the job on opening day, got the job back, was pitching
on opening day.
Went a month without a save opportunity.
Yeah.
Got 3 saves in 4 days, then went out and gave up 10 runs over 5 outings, lost the job, has a 5.70 ERA, he's out. Roberto Osuna gets a 2-inning save. Mm-hmm. I guess that was on Tuesday.
2 for Tuesday.
Right. He's been unbelievable. 40 strikeouts in 31 and a third innings, or 34 and a third innings.
He's a flamethrower. He's a fireball.
2.10 ERA, right. Throws 95 slider and a changeup. But here's the thing. He's out. He throws 2 innings on Tuesday, pitches an inning in the extra inning game on Wednesday, and then Steve Delabar gets the save. So, yeah, you could say Osuna's the closer because he pitched first in the tie game, blah, 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 blah. But I think you're right. I think the Blue Jays closer isn't on the roster right now. Osuna's the guy to pick up.
Right.
But the guy who's going to lead this team in saves probably isn't on the team right now.
There you go. And then a little arms race and another guy. You know, Kendall Graveman, just very unsung right now. Doesn't necessarily wow you, blow you away, but he's been extremely effective. 2.31 ERA, 1.20 whip, 34-11 strikeout to walk. In 7 starts since being called back up on May 23rd. And that would explain why he's been on the wire, because the guy got sent down. I was lucky enough to pick him up. I didn't start him this week, but I just wanted to see how it would go. He's in Texas. Did a good job.
Yeah, pitched great. 2 runs in 7 innings. Yeah. You know, there again, 2 factors here. Number one, the batting average on balls in play, the left on base rate, those were way out of line in his first few starts. Those had to normalize. But part of the reason is that he wasn't commanding the ball. He wasn't striking anybody out. He was walking a ton of people. He was all over the place. Now that he's come back, you see that 11 walks and 46 and two-thirds. The strikeout rate is not great, but, you know, 6.5 per nine is solid. He's commanding a lot better, getting his stuff in the zone, keeping it down. He doesn't walk people. He gets ground balls. He doesn't give up a lot of home runs. That's a formula for success. It's not an ace, but this is a guy that needs to be back on the radar.
Absolutely, and he is. I picked him up. And Marco Estrada, the first pitcher since Dave Steeb, coincidentally a fellow Blue Jay, to do back-to-back 8-inning no-hit appearances, obviously.
And Estrada was a perfect game.
He was perfecto until Logan Forsyth legged one out.
Yeah, that was...
And it was under review.
Pretty exciting. Exciting stuff.
Exciting stuff.
10 strikeouts and 8 2/3 for Marco Estrada. Goes and takes a no-hitter in the 8th, a second straight time, as you said. I love Marco Estrada. I've had him on a lot of teams over the years. But I got to admit, when the Blue Jays acquired him for Adam Lind, I was like, this is not going to end well. Because this is a guy who's home run prone going into one of the best home run parks. But you know what? He's gone back to being the same old Marco Estrada he was at his best moments in Milwaukee. Doesn't throw hard, but commands like crazy. Gets a ton of strikeouts because he can put the ball in a tin cup if he wants to. You look at all of his rate stats right now, they're right in line with anything he ever did on his best day in Milwaukee, except very lucky on the home run rate. So Marco Estrada is what he is.
That. How are you lucky on a home run rate?
Home run to fly ball rate.
Okay.
League average is around 10 or 11%. Right. He's usually around 12 or 13 because he's so home run, so fly ball prone. This year, he's a little over 8%.
So you're saying he's lucky because he's still giving up fly balls, but they're not going over the wall.
Right.
That's kind of weird sounding, if you know. But I understand it.
But that's
the
thing. League average.
Right. He's under league average. He has to be lucky.
He's not only under league average. He's under his own average.
Okay.
League average is around 11. He's usually around 13. This year, he's around 8. So if you give up that many fly balls, eventually some of them sneak over the fence. So what I'm getting at is, you know, he is what he is, which is to say this is a guy that's worth rostering. But when people say, is Marco Estrada for real, don't expect him to take a perfect game into the 8th inning every time out, because he's the same guy he was in his peak with Milwaukee. Low to mid 3 ERA, good whip because he doesn't walk anybody, can strike people out. But once in a while, he's going to give up 3 or 4 home runs in a game, and the ERA is going to go up. So I like Estrada, but, you know, let's put away the anointing oils, as we say once every Bill Parcells in a while.
All right, it's time for a little bit of lightning round with your Twitter questions. We will get to all of them. Let's start with at Kurt Schooley. Would you give up Rizzo, Bauer, and Calhoun for Arrieta, Justin Upton, and Duda in a points league?
Wait a second. This wasn't on my Rizzo, Bauer, and Calhoun for
Arrieta, Justin Upton, Duda. So
I think I would do that. Arrieta definitely better than Bauer. Yeah.
Duda downgrading at first to get the upgrades out of the place.
Duda at worst equal to Calhoun, if not better.
Yep.
Justin Upton hasn't been as good as Rizzo, but guess what? He's got double-digit homers and steals as well. So I like this trade a lot. I would absolutely do it.
I agree. At Kyle 7 May, Desmond.
Take your hand away from your mouth so we can hear you, Mikey.
Sorry. At Kyle 7 May, Desmond or Kendrick rest of the season?
Yeah, we mentioned Kendrick earlier. He's been terrible since I traded for him, so now's not a good time. But Ian Desmond's having a terrible year, and the numbers say there's a reason for it. His walk rate's a career low. His isolated power's a career low. He's pulling the ball more than ever and not hitting it as hard as he usually does. I think he may be smelling free agency, and it's the smelling salts are making him a little dizzy.
He's got sawdust coming out of his bat handle.
Yeah, so, Kendrick isn't having a great year either after the great start. I would probably still go for Desmond, but know what you're getting here. He is a comp to Kendrick right now. On draft day, he was way ahead of him.
Yep.
He's a comp now. You're still going to take him, but you're not getting a 2020 guy right now.
All right, let's go to at B. Hada Ravetti.
Bihara Trivedi.
Trivedi, okay.
Bihara Trivedi.
Trade Archer, Miller. I'm assuming that's Andrew Miller.
Or Shelby Miller?
Or Shelby. Oh, well, we'll see. Bad job by the goose.
All right, anyway.
Archer, Miller, and Heston for it's all starters, I guess, because it's 3-for-3. This is the weirdest trade I've ever seen. Trade Archer, Miller, and Heston for Porcello, Odorizzi, and Cueto.
Right, and you just said it. Why? What's your goal
this
here?
Makes no sense.
This makes no sense. Three challenge trades in one?
Really? First of all, I like a lot of these guys. I mean, Heston and Porcello, they can just cancel each other out. I guess I like Odorizzi and Cueto over Archer and Miller, but by how much could I possibly?
Right.
And Odorizzi's on the DL. I love Archer.
Porcello right now is, unless you're in a deep AL only league, is waiver wire.
I know. Yeah, I don't want to get involved in this. I don't know. My answer is I don't know.
Yeah, the answer would. My answer is, if you want to trade for pitching, why are you doing a challenge trade?
Right.
You know, if you want to do a challenge trade, trade Archer for Cueto. That's the challenge trade, right?
Or trade Miller for Odorizzi because you like Odorizzi better.
Right. Any trade where you're getting back Rick Porcello, yeah. I'm just not even counting that part. So you're doing now a 3-for-2 here. It's not even a challenge trade.
This is a bad job out of Goose.
I'm not sure what this trade seeks to accomplish, but what I can figure is
except
not something
maybe it
that,
seeks to accomplish confusing us. And in that, it succeeded.
There you go. Congratulations. We endorse your trade for confusing us.
At Rothstar 44, Sonny Gray or Matt Harvey, rest of season, head-to-head, Puntos League.
Wow. Another challenge trade.
Yeah.
Look, Sonny Gray, leading the majors in ERA or leading the American League in ERA? Please.
May I say something?
Yes.
This might not be a challenge trade. Okay. This may be a who should I go after trade. I can go after I'm just saying.
Aha.
That's how I usually see it.
Yeah.
Either who, obviously these guys aren't on the wire, so it's not a wire thing. But it might be like, I need to acquire pitching.
Who am I getting?
Who would you target, Sonny Gray or Matt Harvey?
You know, I don't think Harvey's going to be on a meaningful innings limit. If he is, it'll probably be 180, 190. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of good work. Mm-hmm. You know, Sonny Gray's probably going to be around, 200, 210. Even though Matt Harvey went through that brutally rough stretch, he came back and was dominant his last time out.
Mm-hmm.
We've got enough of a body of work on him to know what he's going to be. Sonny Gray, unfortunately, as good as he is and as much as I like Sonny Gray, I don't think he's going to maintain a 175 all year long.
Okay.
So probably rest of season I would take Harvey just based on the notion of what regression will do to both of them.
It's interesting, though, because you brought up a good point about the innings. So you're basically saying, in the grand scheme of things, minimum of 10, potentially 20 inning difference between the two guys. That could be 20 strikeouts. That could be 3 or 4 wins.
Well, but it could be Sonny Gray having a 3 ERA. And
absolutely.
Matt Harvey having a 2.6,
yeah, absolutely,
which matters also. Doesn't matter as much.
Head-to-head points league, what's more important?
The counting numbers? Is Sonny Gray going to be that far ahead of Harvey in innings?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
You make a good point there. I pick Harvey. You obviously pick Gray.
I don't obviously pick Gray. No.
Have some conviction. Have some conviction in your statements.
You're the one that dropped that little nugget in there that got me thinking. You're the one that dropped the pebble in the very quiet lake.
And it created a ripple.
But, I mean, head to head, Harvey.
Flapped my butterfly wings and it changed your thinking all the way across the room.
You can't, to your point, I can't guarantee that Harvey's extra 20 or 10 innings will be exponentially better or all good. Mm-hmm. Right? I can't guarantee that. But in a head-to-head points league, if you're telling me you can guarantee Sonny Gray is going to have 20 more innings, it's worth thinking about. If it's 10, but 20? 20's 20.
20 matters.
That's three starts.
Yeah, this is this.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
No, I think that's an excellent point. I'm on board with that. You know, and it's true that...
And if you still take Harvey, that's fine. I'm just pointing it out.
Harvey's presumed advantage in ERA and WHIP going forward, and I am making an assumption there, doesn't matter a whole heck of a lot over 20 innings. Right. You know, it's like 0.01 in your ERA, whatever that may be. So that is a compelling argument for Gray. No question.
There you go. That's why I'm here. That's what I do. At Glenn G. Michael, Jordan Zimmermann for Shelby Miller and Russell Martin. Which side do you prefer?
I like the Miller and Russ and Martin side. You know, Zimmermann to Miller is a step down, but not a huge step down.
Yeah.
And you're getting Russell Martin, who's an above-average catcher, where most catchers are not good. So presumably you're replacing a scrubby catcher with Russell Martin, who's a top-five offensive catcher.
Yep.
I like that deal a lot.
I agree. At Anthony Letigre.
Letigre.
Tony the Tiger.
Nice.
Ah! I'm on fire today. Do you recommend buying low on Big Poppy?
I do, Tony, and I'm glad you asked. And let me tell you why. On my appearance on MLB Now last week, which I'm sure you saw.
Dropper.
Yeah, I was on it, MLB Now.
As my dad would say, what funeral home did you go in to get that suit?
Yeah, MLB Network, as a matter of fact. Thank you very much for hooking us up with that. Anyway, one of the guys we talked about at length was David Ortiz. We're talking about StatCast and batted ball and exit velocity and all that stuff. Let me throw a couple of numbers at you. David Ortiz's average exit velocity this year is 93.8 miles per hour. For players with 100 or more batted balls, that's seventh in the major leagues, and I'm going to tell you the names that he's behind. Giancarlo Stanton, pretty good hitter.
He's pretty good.
Miguel Cabrera, pretty good hitter.
Pretty good.
Jock Peterson, having a nice year.
He's pretty good.
Ryan Braun, having a pretty good year. Mm-hmm. A little bit banged up lately, pretty good. Josh Donaldson, bringing some rain, I think you would say. And Pedro Alvarez, not having a great year, but hits the long ball.
But he's the bull.
Number seven is David Ortiz. Let me tell you a couple of names he's ahead of.
Okay.
Mike Trout, Paul Goldschmidt.
Albert Pujols.
Everybody else in Major League Baseball other than those seven names. Now, let me give you another number. 236 batting average on balls in play for David Ortiz, despite the seventh highest exit velocity in baseball. Those two numbers cannot live in opposition for long. Ortiz's OPS is up 225 points in June from where it was in May. I think it's going to continue to go up. I absolutely am buying low.
And you mentioned at the top of the program that there are going to be some StatCast second level or whatever you call it, second something that are going to help fantasy players. But there's one right now that really helps.
Exit velocity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matters. You mix exit velocity with BABIP, we got to come up with something for that.
Yeah. I don't want to scoop what we're talking about. The point is, you know, batting average on balls in play as a concept is really telling. But one of the things I've said a lot, and not that I'm some super genius, you know, or mad scientist.
You're definitely not.
It's not always a proxy for luck. It is a proxy for skill, because if I was a major league hitter, my batting average on balls in play,
the ball hard is a skill.
Presumed I put a ball in play,
right,
my BABIP would be zero.
Mm-hmm.
But BABIP is based on not only how many times you put the ball in play, but are they line drives, are they pop-ups, are they fly balls? Now we can even go past that and say, how hard are you hitting the ball? If you're hitting the ball on average 94 miles per hour and you have a 236 BABIP, that means you're hitting a ton of atom balls.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also have a shift involved here.
Right, but the shift isn't going to cost David Ortiz 60 or 70 points of BABIP.
That's true.
It doesn't. It just doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And here's why, Mike. If you look at his spray chart distribution this year, he's actually hitting the ball to center field and the opposite field ever so slightly more than he has in the past couple of years. He's not the dead pull hitter, not to the same degree at least. He is spraying the ball around a little bit more. So with that exit velocity, with that BABIP, knowing what we know about his spray chart distribution, you know, you can look at his walk and strikeout numbers, slight decay there, but he's 39 years old. He's not going to live forever.
Right.
The point is there is some decline happening here. He's 39 years old, let's be fair, but he's not falling off the cliff, and in fact, I think he's going to get better.
I think that answers Tony Tiger's question.
That's good stuff.
Lightning round for the last four.
Snip that one.
Yeah.
make a sight clip out of that
At Lithberg Brent, should I drop any of the following to pick up Matt Moore? Charlie Morton, Nick Martinez, Chavez, I'm sure Jesse Chavez.
It's not Eric.
No, it's not Eric. Chase Anderson in a 10-team head-to-head points.
Well, in a 10-team league, all those guys are fringy starters. I would probably cut Nick Martinez because of the poor strikeout rate.
Yep, I agree. At JB Shoesgetter, pick two for the rest of the season out of these three: Tyson Ross, Garrett Richards, Alex Wood.
I would take Ross and Richards. We've talked a little bit about Ross, his struggles with command, which, you know, to be fair, you might put a little bit of that at Derek Norris's feet. But I think Austin Hedges is going to start playing more and more. Derek Norris has worn down terribly. Yeah. You could say it's fatigue. You could just say it's regression or whatever. He's been awful in June. I think Hedges is going to start to play more. He's going to start catching Tyson Ross. Ross only walked one guy's last time out. Mm. It was Arizona, not a great offense. But I think Ross is going to get better. I think Richards is going to get better. Atlanta, you know, not a good team, not a good offense, as we talked about at the top of the show. If they trade Grilly or Johnson, their bullpen starts to get a little softer. That's the guy I would be willing to drop if I had to.
I agree. And Joe Ross, for all his performance, gets sent down to make room for Strasburg.
Mm-hmm.
Life isn't fair sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
At Brianne, my baby, Chua or Aoki, rest of season? Well, Aoki just broke his leg, so I think that one's answered. I'm sure this came in before that, so... Brianne, I think we're going
to
go Chew.
To be fair, I would have taken Chew anyway.
Okay, there you go. Enough said. At Duke Diligence, not Due Diligence, Duke Diligence, which third baseman is the better long-term keeper? Ooh, Machado or Bryant?
Machado's been a huge surprise to me this year, I got to admit. The power is way ahead of where I thought it would be, but also he's stealing bases, mm-hmm. which shows you a lot about what they think of the health of that knee. But Chris Bryant, who projects to be a home run title type of hitter, has a half dozen steals too. And has spotted Machado some at bats. So I would stick with Bryant, but I got to say Machado has really impressed and surprised me this year. Imprised. That's a combination of impressed and surprised. He surpressed me.
Yeah. All right, well, not to be a Debbie Downer, but I figured it was easier to do it at the end instead of the beginning. But we'd be remiss without mentioning our good friend of the 4-1-1 in Darrell Hamilton. I'm sure you heard all about it in the news. We're not going to get into it. Very sad, very scary stuff, but... the one thing about Darrell that I remembered pretty quickly after kind of processing everything was every time he saw us, he would say, Fantasy 411, every time.
I didn't even think you were going to say anything, man. Yeah. I have to do that. You know, we've been fortunate to, and we are fortunate to work with so many awesome people, mm-hmm. not just here at BAM. I mean, this is a really cool industry. We have a lot of fun doing what we do. And, you know, when I heard the news about Darrell, my first reaction was, please, this, you know, any other guy named Hamilton in the world. And my second reaction was, my just immediate visceral reaction was, I never saw the guy without a smile on his face. It was just the first thing that immediately came to mind was him smiling at me. That every time I would see him at a after he left to go work for the Office of the Commissioner in Baseball Operations, mm-hmm. now at MLB Network. So I'd see him, you know, at the All-Star Game, at winter meetings, things of that nature. And he would always have a big smile. He had these big cheeks and dimples and everything. And he just seemed like he just was a really happy guy. And the thing is that I feel even better about that thought now, because that seems to be the first thing that everybody has written and said about him since then.
Yep.
So it's just heartbreaking and awful and shocking and terrible, everything that's happened to him. But it just makes me really grateful that we get to work with so many awesome people. And, I don't have a bad word to say about the guy, and you know.
Well said. Well, and with that said, we'll see you next week on the MLB.com Fantasy 411.